Back now with Day to Day and a car story, an old Mercedes-Benz story, and these can get bumpy. And I'm thinking, Madeline, that regular listeners may recall the eco-conversion performed by your husband, Joe, to get your old diesel to run on used vegetable oil.
Yes, my car and his car. And, you know, it's a good thing overall, but, you know, sometimes these things don't work out as well as
occasionally
you, as
you're
you
late
wish.
To work. But anyway, this yearning for the German Uber vehicle, really, it's a transcultural phenomenon. It's the story in a new book, My Mercedes is Not for Sale. I read it, and I wanted to talk with the author.
You would suppose that people in the poorest parts of the world wouldn't have a need for a Mercedes-Benz, right? But
yeah.
What I found when I went there is that, like, I could sell the car to almost anybody. I mean, everybody wanted to get into a Mercedes.
That's Jeroen van Berkjeek. And the thing is, his Mercedes was for sale. A lot of old Euro cars get shipped to Africa and sold there. Jeroen, a Dutch journalist, decided to drive his. He got what you might call a clunker, a 1988 190D, paid $1,200 for it. And then he drives through Europe and down to Spain, takes a ferry boat across to Morocco. And from there, it's a long way around the Sahara to his destination, West Africa.
Basically, when I passed the border of Morocco, when you're like really getting into Africa, the border guy actually tried to persuade me to sell the car to him. And he sort of threatened to not let me into the country when I didn't sell the car to him. So yeah, I could sell the car almost anywhere. But yeah, then I wouldn't have a book, would I?
You wouldn't have a book. The journey continues. The road ends. You're driving through sand. Along the way, the car breaks down and you find out that actually there's some kind of infrastructure to repair these broken down old Mercedes-Benz.
Oh, yes, because in a country like Mauritania, I think there's like 50% of the cars on the road are this Mercedes-Benz, so the 190 model. The capital of Mauritania, Nouakchott, is like the capital of Mercedes-Benz in Africa. So you will find almost anywhere a mechanic who can fix this car. And that's also the reason that people really want to buy this car, because they can get it fixed everywhere. They basically set up shop in any patch of land, and the only tool they may have is a jack.
You have this kind of moment there in Ghana where you recognize you've come to a place that actually functions. It works. There are no aid workers. No one's trying to help these people out or anything. They have a real economy going there.
Yeah, it's a place called Suame Magazine, and it's a whole neighborhood of car mechanics living together. And it's like a scene from the Middle Ages, people all covered in oil, and it's dark, and it's ugly, and they just spill oil into the river. And so it's disgusting in one part. But on the other hand, I mean, this is a real vibrant economy. People all over West Africa come to this place to get their cars fixed. And that you don't find that much in Africa, that you get a feel of this is working and people feel proud of themselves to work in this place.
You've got a video up at YouTube. We'll link to it at our site, npr.org. Is this where you shot a part of this video? Because you're out in back of a garage there and you say, well, they do have parts here. And then you cut to this, just looks like a soccer field full of old engines,
right?
Just kind of rusting out.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, there's a mechanic who only deals in transmissions, or Mercedes transmissions, or Toyota transmissions. Then there's a guy who only deals in hubcaps, or in Toyota hubcaps, or Renault hubcaps. So there's enormous specialization going on, and you can go there with like any car except American cars to get it fixed. I mean, I'm sorry to report, but basically, in Africa, they drive everything except American cars.
Well, thank you for that, Jeroen.
Well,
you know, this book is really not about cars. It's about the people that you encounter and the discoveries that you make along the way. The road runs out at one point. The asphalt ends. You're crossing a border. You have to take on a guide. And this relationship doesn't work out all that well.
No, because I was sort of expecting an older person who could tell me about what I saw around me. What you expect from a guide, somebody who can tell you a little bit about what you see. I had all these visions of spending the night among camels in the dunes and under the stars.
And what you get is some 20-year-old kid gum-chewing, cigarette-smoking. He doesn't want to talk to you. He doesn't want anything to do with you.
No, he's basically interested in my my Tupac CD collection. And when we are looking for a place to camp, he dumps me right next to a diesel generator thing. And then I have to sleep in diesel fumes that night while I was imagining to have this wonderful night in the desert. So no, that didn't actually work out very well. No.
You're out in this kind of romantic experience that you imagined before the trip, but that's not what Africa turns out to be at all.
No, right. I mean, I have sort of a hate-love relationship with Africa. I mean, a lot of people who are after my money, but I can't really blame them because I would basically do the same if I were in their shoes. Here's a white guy in a Mercedes Benz. I mean, yeah, that's a target. That's pretty obvious. But I meet a lot of wonderful people. And there's, of course, going to Africa, you know, there's going to be misery. But what I find so attractive about Africa is the realization that all that stuff that you in the Western world worry about, your mortgage, your cars, your home, your job, that really doesn't matter. That's a wonderful experience for me.
I see you quoted as saying that you found the people that you met in many places seemed a lot happier than the people you know in Western Europe or when you've come to America.
Yes, I mean, when you come to America or to Holland, people are always complaining about something. And here are people who are really in a lot worse situations, and they don't seem to complain that much.
Jeroen van Berkjeek did sell his Mercedes in the end. He got twice what he paid for it, along with a lesson about how the global economy really operates. His book is My Mercedes is Not for Sale. You can read excerpts and see video from his journey at our website, npr.org.
Day to Day is a production of NPR News with contributions from Slate.com. I'm Madeline Brand.
And I'm Alex Chadwick.